Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former three-time All-Pro NFL cornerback, and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
A Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
If you missed it yesterday, the Texans had four guys make the Pro Bowl. Starters, Derek Stingley Jr. and Laremy Tunsil. We'll get to both of them in just a second. I was very excited to see Nico Collins and Joe Mixon make it because I feel like Mixon has been toiling in a backfield behind a line that's not done a great job of opening holes for him, and he's had a really good season individually. And I was really excited to see Nico make it because he was the best receiver in football when he went out with the hamstring injury. And neither of those guys were very high up the board on the fan list. So it just goes to show you how much respect they're getting from the players and coaches, which is the other two-thirds of the voting. Here was Nico Collins yesterday on The Drive with Sterner and Hughley talking about making the Pro Bowl.
Pro Bowl wide receiver.
Yeah.
First of all, congrats. Hey, congrats, man.
For sure. I mean,
you've earned it. You deserve it.
No doubt. I appreciate it.
Talk to us a little bit about just, definitely, you know, what that kind of thing means to you.
Yeah, it means a lot, man. I feel like personally, it's a personal goal. You know, I feel like everybody want to get to a Pro Bowl, you know, be selected all pro. You know, I feel like that's a goal for everybody. And for me, it's definitely one of my goals this year and always. Always been one of my goals, man. But I'm happy and blessed be able to have this opportunity, man, and go be part of the Pro Bowl, man. There's no better feeling. You know, I feel like it's a great goal, a great, you know, opportunity to have, and just say, you know, you made it to the Pro Bowl. You know, I feel like not too many people get that opportunity, you know, but I'm blessed, man, to have it and to be selected, you know, to go out there in Orlando, man, just have fun. You know, it's no better feeling, for sure.
Probably should have made it last year, if we're being honest. Like, this is one of those things, those phenomenons with the Pro Bowl, Seth, that unless you're a guy who comes in as an anointed guy into the league, it's almost like you got to earn your stripes. It happens a lot on the offensive and defensive line where you got to actually be good for a few years before they'll name you a Pro Bowler.
It's weird. You got to earn entry into the pool of candidates.
That's right.
Yeah, so like last year he earned entry into the pool of candidates. Unless you, like you said, really break through or you're a big name to begin with.
Yeah.
And I think that with Nico, the fun thing about him, and we talked about this with Andre a little bit in the pregame last week. This is the only good thing about last week's game, actually.
It was the pregame with Andre Johnson and David Anderson.
The only good part of my day or weekend. Yeah, and Drew Hodgson was there with us. So, but just like with Andre, there is something about a defensive back seeing somebody that big that can move as fast as he does, that it puts that little sphincter tightening element into it. And then when that big guy can also slow down and hit a stop or, you know, break over the middle or whatever, it's really, really hard to cover the guy. It's hard to run with him downfield, but in even just knowing how much cushion to keep, when to break on a double move or anything like that, he's a headache. And I think people now respect him as that kind of a guy of like, man, it's really hard to play a clean game versus Nico.
Yeah.
So it's one of the few bright spots of the offense this year that I can feel good about going on into the future. Like, it's been nice having Joe Mixon. I think without Joe Mixon, obviously, they would. I don't know how many games will they have won if they didn't have Joe Mixon. Let's say Damian Pierce is the lead running back. If Joe Mixon got hurt and never came back,
that's a great question. I'd have to go back and see which games it was that Joe Mixon kind of put the cape on for.
Yeah,
because I don't think, as much as I like Damian Pierce, I don't think he's capable of doing some of the things Joe Mixon did in those games this
year.
He's not in that club in his bag.
But because Joe Mixon's an older running back, it's not like I feel awesome about him and that he's going to be here for the next 7 years. Where with Nico, it's nice for me to go into fantasy land every now and then and think, okay, well, if they fix things up on offense ever, this is a guy who should be a mainstay for a long time.
Here are the games that Joe Mixon ran for 100 yards in. He's run for 100 yards in 7 games this year. The opener against Indianapolis, he was literally named the best offensive player in the AFC that week. So I think it's fair to say, like, that's one
game. That was a one-score game.
It was a one-score game. I think that's one game. The New England game, he ran for 102 yards on 13 carries, but Damian had a good game that game. That's Damian's one good game he's had this year.
That was a game. Well, in both of those guys, the running backs averaged less than 2 yards per carry on all the runs except for the two big runs.
The two big ones.
Yeah, like it was. It wasn't like a steady grind of a game, but they probably would have won that game anyway.
They won by 20. It's hard to say Joe Mixon's worth 20 points, you know. He ran for 115 and 2 touchdowns in the loss to Green Bay that they lost on the last second field. He was dynamic in that game. He had 2 touchdowns in that game. So they lost that game anyways. He had 106 yards and a touchdown in the game they lost to the Jets. That was a game where he was at like 85 yards at halftime, and then they just didn't do anything in the second half.
Yeah.
So they lost that game. He ran for 109 and 3 touchdowns against Dallas. That turned into a blowout that was actually a close game at halftime. That was, you know, that was like, oh, wow, they scored in the second half. Go figure.
I could easily see them dropping that somehow without Joe Mixon.
Could you?
There.
Okay, so we'll give it to him. That's 2. The other game he ran for 100 yards was the win over Jacksonville. He ran for 100 yards against Indianapolis in week 8, the game they won by a field goal. I don't think they win that game without Joe. I think it's safe to say he's worth like 2.5 wins to them this year, something like that.
And I mean, but then the other side of the coin is, man, whenever they face a good run defense, other than Green Bay, whenever they face a good run defense, it's generally been Joe Mixon getting 2 yards per carry or less. And look, the Texans have the second most. They have the second highest rate of the running back getting hit in the backfield in the NFL. Like, there is just, it's, and Joe Mixon at times, like, I'm curious on some of his reads. Sometimes it feels like he's trying to break big ones a little too often. And I don't want to make too many excuses for any given player, but I think he's, the picture he's seeing down in and down out is making it really hard for him to trust the reads.
Yeah.
Because, like we said, he gets hit in the backfield a lot.
The games where he doesn't rush, if he doesn't rush for 100, he's out of the mix. Like, the best game he's had where he hasn't rushed for 100 yards was the Kansas City game a couple weeks ago where he went 14 carries for 57 yards. And other than that, it is the other games, 9 carries, 25 yards. 14 carries, 22 yards against Tennessee last time they played.
Yeah.
So that would be nice to see Mixon get going this time around against Tennessee. 20 against Detroit, 25 carries for 46 yards against the Lions. 12 carries, 23 yards against the Dolphins in a game I was told the offense was amazing that day. And then against Baltimore, everybody sucked. He had 9 carries for 26 yards. Damn, he was damn near prolific with 9 carries for 26 yards. So I was happy for Mixon that he made it. He put out a nice tweet, kind of, you know, propping up the Texans and Nick Caserio for believing in him. That's only the second time he's made the Pro Bowl. I was a little surprised by that. Like, Mixon's been around a while. I think this is his 8th season. That's only the second thing. The only other time he's made the Pro Bowl in his career, because he's been very consistent. The only other time was in 2021, the year the Bengals ended up going to the Super Bowl that year. He tweeted this, Mixon, honored to make the Pro Bowl. This achievement isn't about me. It's about the team. Shout out to the fans. Oh, thank you, Joe. Thanks to the guys up front and GM Nick Caserio for believing in me. Plan is to miss the Pro Bowl because the Texans are playing in the Super Bowl. And he puts his H's up and says, we are Texans. I like where your head's at, Joe Mixon. I like where your head's at. Good job. The stat that is going to infuriate Texan fans, because I'm already seeing it. Text message. How the hell did Tunsil make it? You know, and you
Tunsil's a really good pass protector.
You broke this down yesterday. Yeah.
Yeah. He's a really good pass protector, but he's not nearly at the level of the genuinely elite offensive tackles when it comes to being good as a pass protector and a run blocker. And that has hurt the team versus the Titans last time. He just got manhandled versus the Titans.
Yeah.
And he also, he commits penalties at a breakneck pace. He's a league leader in penalties all three, which doesn't hurt him in the voting.
No.
We know as a team that it hurts him. Like, we could, especially early in the season, drives were killed specifically because of Laremy Tunsil.
Yep.
But he games the system.
Yeah.
He knows that his pass, those false starts, they help him. It helps him when he gets an extreme jump on the snap count, but it doesn't hurt his pass blocking grade. Right. And people look at that and they think, oh, well, there you go. But like as a fan of the team, you know how much it hurts.
Sure, sure. And if you're upset that he's starting in the Pro Bowl, don't look at your fellow fans. He wasn't even in the top 10 for tackles in voting in the Pro Bowl. It's the other two-thirds that put him in there, the players and the coaches. That's where he got his respect from. This is the stat that I think a lot of Texan fans would be like, are you kidding me? Laremy Tunsil has now made the Pro Bowl 5 of the 6 seasons he's been a Houston Texan. He made none before he got here. So they traded for him. They traded those 2 first-round picks and a second. And he's made the Pro. The only year he didn't make the Pro Bowl was the year that David Culley was here, where he had that mysterious wrist injury for 12 games or whatever it was.
Yeah.
He now has tied J.J. Watt for number of Pro Bowls as a Houston, or period, but as a Houston Texan. J.J. Watt, I know it sounds strange, but J.J. Watt made it 5 times. He made it in 2012, 13, 14, and 15. Then he was hurt. 16 and 17, came back from all those injuries, was all pro and pro bowler again in 18, and then got hurt again in 19, COVID year in 2020, they just weren't very good, and then he didn't make it in Arizona. But I think that would surprise a lot of Texan fans if you told them Laremy Tunsil and J.J. Watt have been to the same number of Pro Bowls now.
He's, I look at Laremy Tunsil kind of like the character from Major League, Roger Dorn.
Yeah.
The third baseman who doesn't want to field grounders because he needs to protect his face. Like, he doesn't have an appetite for the gritty side of football, baseball.
He's got a huge contract.
Football and or baseball.
Yeah.
But he has a huge contract. He's kind of a star.
Yeah.
But he's, he just doesn't play the gritty part of football that you really want to see. He's just so far away from Trent Williams and Penei Sewell and guys like that. And it's frustrating that when he's out in space, as athletic as he is, he's awful out in space too, on screens and everything like that. So it's never going to endear yourself to the fan base when you're a guy who's, especially when you play offensive line, where you're kind of a finesse offensive lineman.
Yeah, he's going to wind up. I mean, if he stays here and he gets another contract, which, you know, whatever, we'll see what happens. He might wind up having one of the strangest Texan resumes of all time. Like, Andre Johnson made the Pro Bowl the most times of any Texan, 7.
Yeah.
If you were to ask me, like, can Laremy Tunsil pass Andre Johnson, I would say absolutely he can. You know, like, they're going to move on from at least one of the highly paid offensive linemen this offseason. I feel strongly that they should. I don't know that they will. And they're all sort of in the same, and when I'm referring to Tunsil, Titus Howard, and Shaq Mason, they're all sort of in similar situations in that you're not upside down on their contracts, but you ain't saving a lot by cutting them. There's a big dead money hit. They're almost like break-even players. They ain't cutting Tunsil. You know?
I still get frustrated with Bill O'Brien because, remember, Trent Williams, in the year that he held out the entire season in Washington, he was living in Missouri City.
Yeah.
He was there. You could have come and gotten him. And
for a third and a fifth is what he went for.
For a third and a fifth is what he ended up going for to San Francisco. And everything that Laremy Tunsil is not, Trent Williams is.
Yeah.
And there is a culture issue on the offense in general right now, but especially on the offensive line, I think, where there's a lack of toughness, there's a lack of grittiness, there's a lack of appetite for violence. There's no appetite for violence there.
Nope.
They're too well fed.
Nope.
They've filled up on Christmas sugar cookies, and they've got no appetite for the bloodier part of the sport.
You're absolutely right.
Except, man, this offense disgusts me. As a whole, with individual exceptions, individual players that are genuinely
who's exempt?
Teams.
Who's on the Seth Payne exempt list right now on the offense?
Okay, I'm gonna leave out some of the younger guys because they still have to establish themselves.
Sure,
like, Kate Stover's not swarm yet because he's not a good enough tight end.
Yeah.
But he's still young and he's still new to the position.
I'm excited about Kate Stover, yeah.
Joe Mixon, Nico Collins.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
No CJ Stroud.
Not yet.
Okay.
He's got to prove himself as an NFL quarterback.
Okay.
But has CJ Stroud proven himself as an NFL quarterback?
Completely, and
totally.
No, I mean, but almost by definition. He could have a good year this year, and I would say he hadn't yet because it's only been 2 seasons.
Because you got to do it. You got to make it for a few years.
Yeah.
CJ has the potential to. but he didn't. And for, there's reasons he didn't play well this year.
Mm-hmm.
But look, he's the leader of the offense, and this is a soft offense.
Yeah.
So he's one of the younger guys, I guess, that I'm gonna like. I'm still gonna give. I'll give Jarrett Patterson and Juice Scruggs an exemption for now because they're still young players.
Sure.
But the overall core of this offense, it's not a tough offense.
Yeah.
It is chock full of soft dudes.
Yep.
And you can't play championship football that way.
No.
You know, Tank Dell's not soft.
No.
I'll give you that. Now, he might end up ultimately, maybe he's too small to play football in the NFL. I don't know. But he's certainly not soft.
Yeah.
So there's a few guys, but it's the some. But then I think there's other guys that might be kind of on the fence. But like Shaq Mason, I don't think he's soft, but he's old and he's not playing well. And there's nothing that if I didn't know anything of Shaq Mason before he got to Houston, or if I only started watching the Texans this year, I'm not going to be like, oh yeah, that's the kind of guy you need to have on the
right.
He got thrown away like he was a nylon shopping bag by Tavondre Sweat a few weeks ago.
He did. Yeah.
This offense, there's nothing tough about this offense.
Nope.
The sum total of it all, even though you have some guys on there who are a tougher element, they cannot run the ball. They look checked out emotionally at times. It's soft and it's pathetic and something's got to change. Maybe it clicks. But man, I don't know what they think. I don't know what they think rolling CJ out there for a quarter or two versus the Titans this time around is going to prove that they haven't been able to prove over the first 17 weeks.
Yeah, we're beyond the point where I'm expecting it to like that. That point was long ago where I held out hope. Like, okay, you know, maybe maybe something clicks was getting Nico back.
Yeah.
You know, you get Nico because then you got Mixon healthy, you got Tank healthy, you lost Diggs, but if you got Nico and Tank. That's what your offense was last year when it was really clicking in the middle part of the season there. And that was my maybe something will click. And it didn't. You know, spurts.
Yeah.
And that's what Bobby Slowa keeps pointing to. We know we're capable of it. And it's like, okay, well, I can make a three-pointer every now and then. It doesn't mean I should be a sniper for the Rockets. You know what I mean? Like,
I'll say, look, with CJ, for instance, it's been cumulative, and it's shown that over the course of the season, I think in some respects his decision making has gotten worse, especially in clutch moments because the pass protection is so bad. But I think he missed an opportunity, and he made some bad decisions in that Green Bay game in the fourth quarter. In Kansas City, he basically single-handedly squandered the opportunity to stay in that football game by a horrendous sequence of events down in the red zone in the fourth quarter.
Yep.
He's made some bad decisions in fourth quarters that he needs to get over, and regardless of the circumstances around him, he can't be the reason that they're losing in the fourth quarter.
No.
And he has been a few times this year. He's been the reason they're losing in that moment.
Yeah, it totally feels to me like this needs an offseason kind of thing. I'm not saying they can't win a couple playoff games. I think they can. But as you've pointed out many times, it ain't going to be on the back of the offense. It's going to be defense turning the other team over, special teams giving you short fields and invisible yards in the return game, and probably Kaimi needing to straighten out whatever's going on with him and becoming what he was the first 5 weeks of the year.
Yeah.
You're going to be kicking a lot of field goals probably if the trend holds true. The offense feels like let's get to April or June. Yeah.
Look, you know I'm very careful in using the S word. I don't like to call teams or units or anything soft because it's a very, very loaded word in football. So I use it very sparingly. There have been bad Texans teams where I don't think they were as soft as this offense is.
Yeah.
There's nothing about it that's intimidating or tough or physical or anything. They get their asses handed to them by good run defenses.
Yep.
They don't even put up a fight. It's really bad.
Yeah.
So and that's where, man, whatever the systemic changes need to be, if D'Amico doesn't see and recognize that, I'd be astounded.
Yeah.
If Caserio doesn't see and recognize that, I'd be astounded.
Yeah.
So there's got to be wholesale change, both in personnel and something coaching-wise. Whatever they think the issue is, and maybe for whatever reason, they don't think it's Bobby Slowick specifically. Maybe it's they think it's specifically Chris Strausser or something else. There's got to be change because you can't keep rolling this way.
Yep. Is the Texans' likely playoff opponent having some dissension within the ranks right now? We will let you hear some audio. We'll let you be the judge. That's coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast is driven by West Point Lincoln of Sugarland. On the Southwest Freeway, exit Kirkwood and take the first U-turn at West Airport under the giant American flag. It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Seth will give his prediction for the game on Sunday in the next segment. I'm gonna guess Seth from the tone this hour of the show that you're not predicting a high scoring game this weekend.
I don't.
Hey, Davis Mills comes in, changes things up a little bit. You know.
If there's one thing the Texans have done a good job of this year, it's scoring points in the first half.
Yeah.
So if they're only planning on playing their starters in the first half, then maybe I should be more optimistic about it. And it feels like a preseason game. These guys will not shut up about how D'Amico has a plan for how much guys are going to play and everything.
Yeah.
That sounds exactly like a preseason game.
Yeah.
So just like a preseason game, you know what? I've been skeptical of this strategy, but maybe D'Amico, like, if he just wants to give him a little bit of confidence, he'll be able to pretend when he's talking to the team,
yeah,
like, hey, look what we did when we were on the field. We went out and did this and did that, and try to hope that everybody else forgets that, yeah, they've done that a lot this year in the first half and then just completely fallen apart in the second half.
Let's get to the topic at hand. This is audio from the Pittsburgh locker room, the Steelers. Open locker room. George Pickens, obviously one of Pittsburgh's best offensive players, wide receiver. He's the one that makes it go for them offensively. I guess Russell Wilson threw an interception in the Kansas City game that they played on Christmas Day, because that's the last time they played. And George Pickens was asked about not being on the same page with Russell Wilson. Take a listen. There's very little Pickens in this audio, but you can tell from the reaction towards the end here, kind of like how this whole thing went.
It seemed like you and Russ weren't on the same page in that interception against the Chiefs. How does that happen, and what do you guys do to address it?
You said me and Russ wasn't on the same page?
Yeah, well, that's what he said.
That's what he said?
Yeah.
Or is that what you said?
That's what he said.
Okay.
How do you just address that?
Thank you. All right, thanks, guys.
How do you address that? I'll set the visual. Pickens, who looked livid, had on one of those kind of like those things you put, like in the cold weather, you pull up over your head where it's got
those Cornholio things.
Cornholio things.
Yeah.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah, for you Beavis and Butthead fans out there, he took the chin of it, pulled it up over his mouth, turned around and went back to his locker, and the PR person was like, "All right, guys, we're done here."
That's a hard one for him, because obviously I had listened to it. I didn't see the audio or see the visual. I think that, for one, you know, my advice to athletes and coaches is always, I learned this from Tom Coughlin, never respond to a question when a reporter tells you, hey, so-and-so said this, because you don't know the context. You don't know exactly how it was phrased, everything else. And I didn't hear the Russell Wilson audio or know exactly how he framed it. So I think George Pickens, in not responding at the very least, at least partially executed that strategy. Now, it looked like it upset him.
Yes.
And that I would read into it as, okay, that was a Russell Wilson mistake. And if Russell Wilson is saying we're not on the same page, that's a nice way to maybe, like, not take accountability for it. A lot of times quarterbacks will say, quarterbacks, it's interesting. Yeah, it's on me. Or if they say we're not on the same page, it's a nice way to not blame the receiver or what have you. But, yeah, I would guess that was definitely a Russell Wilson issue, but I don't know. Are there rumors of discontent between those two?
Well, I don't know. I mean, there's, with George Pickens, there's always rumors that he's not content. You know what I mean? Like, he's always been a handful. He's a good player, though. He's a good player, and he's, like, their only threat, real, like, threat offensively, you know?
It's been a weird year for, like, even on... Now, I know with the Eagles, it hasn't been a straight line of awesomeness the entire season. But the fact that A.J. Brown and Jalen Hurts were at odds with each other, and yet, despite are on a very good football team, it feels like, and I feel like I'm leaving somebody out, but that there's There have been more stories of discontent quarterback-wide receiver relationships, even on good offenses.
Garrett Wilson and, well, they aren't a good offense, but Garrett Wilson and Aaron Rodgers for sure.
Yeah, that's been a high profile. Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. So it obviously doesn't meet that criteria of the A.J. Brown thing.
Yeah.
At the very least, we don't feel like Nico Collins and C.J. Stroud are at odds with each other.
Zero. And, it's funny you say that. Like, I do look around the league, and mostly, at the bad teams, and you just see how it's just... I mean, you read these stories about the Colts and the Jets, and there's other teams, too, where there's clearly that's, clearly guys aren't pulling in the right direction. And this is not, you said it yesterday, Seth, and I agree with you. Ultimately, I'd rather have a team full of people who are sniping at each other that win 13 games and go to the Super Bowl than have a 9-win team that gets knocked out the second week of January and they're all holding hands and singing Kumbaya. You know,
I'd rather have the 94 Oilers than this squad. Was it 94 or 93?
93.
Sorry, 93 when there was all that drama.
Yeah.
I think that's... I'm having a hard time listening to Bobby Slowick's press conferences anymore. And it's... I don't even want to make it about him specifically. It's just that it's been so much incompetence offensively that I don't have the appetite to listen to his explanations or lack thereof for things. When he talks... He'll talk about how tight-knit everybody is and how cool it is, and it's like it almost makes me angry. Even though he's talking about a positive thing that I believe, I'm like, I don't care. I don't need a kumbaya moment out of these underachievers. I don't need them to be the nice boys down the hall.
I would rather they be mad at you. I would rather they be mad at you like everybody's mad at you. Yeah, Bobby, man, I always liked his press conferences, and I think his coordinators go, he's pretty open and honest. He's starting to ramble. That's the thing. Like, I look at the cuts yesterday we get from the Slowick press conference. I'm like, 2 minutes and 20 seconds, huh? Okay. Minute 46.
He's turning into a guy that I have to cut up the audio instead of just playing the response.
Yeah.
And I can't find a part of it that doesn't make me sick.
Do you want a palate cleanser? Because I feel like you need a palate cleanser. The offense for the Texans has set you off a few times today.
Yeah,
you don't like J.J. Redick, do you? I don't like J.J. Redick. I find him to be a little bit annoying.
I feel like I used to... J.J. Redick used to be the kind of player that, like, all right, Duke. I hate him, but I know that if he were on the Rockets, I'd think he was the best thing that ever it was
That's fair.
Yeah, he was always that kind of a player for me. But yes, post-retirement where he tries to play this kind of like, I'm in the media, but I'm not like the rest of them.
Right, I'm above everybody.
He comes off as really pompous and superior.
And he has since he became the Lakers coach too at their press conferences and everything else. Like
he talks like the Lord of basketball.
He does talk like the LOB. Yes.
Yes.
The lob. Here was Charles Barkley last night, just during highlights of another game, by the way.
Because apparently J.J. Redick had said something about basically the media, the talking heads are one of the reasons why people are turning away from the NBA.
Well, and I think, too, there are people in the NBA that have gone after inside the NBA saying that, well, they're bad for our game because they trash all the bad, they point out the bad and they clown us all the time. So here was Charles Barkley giving a little back to J.J. Redick.
Was he just talking about folks on TV?
What did he say? We're the reason people ain't watching this crappy product we got. JJ. Yeah, us. Like, we out there jacking up 103s a night. JJ, I don't know, Jason Monroe, I don't know who that is, but JJ, you come for the king, you better not miss. Because I can get you, brother, because I got your Lakers games. You can't hide them flaws they got. You just a dead man walking. They got rid of Frank Vogel, who did a good job. They got rid of Darvin Ham, who did a good job. But you came out there thinking you were going to change things with that same ugly girl you went on the date with.
64-51 was your halftime score. Lakers as we get back to the highlights. And Rudy Gobert.
So, he came in there thinking, I can make this thing work. Yeah, you can.
77-71.
Put some makeup on that pig.
The Lakers stink, man.
Come on, man.
By the way,
we're good. There's literally highlights of I think Milwaukee and Minnesota playing each other.
Yeah,
and Charles is just going off on J.J. Redick and how horrible the Lakers are.
Honestly, you know what? Especially with inside the NBA, because there's so many voices going. That's one of those ones where I have to close my eyes and see if it's good for radio or not. This one, actually, I'm watching it and I'm having a hard time really paying attention. because of that, because they weren't even playing the Lakers on there.
Right.
This one, I was like, there's no way this is going to be good on radio. I closed my eyes, and I was like, oh, okay. Oh,
it's
without the disconnect of watching non-Lakers highlights. Was, okay, this makes sense.
It was
now,
funny.
The Lakers are they'd be, what, the sixth seed right now?
Oh, I haven't even looked at this.
They're not a trash basketball team.
No, but the Rockets are ahead of them. I don't really go looking down in the standings. I only, see who we got to catch.
Oh, yes,
catch, true.
You live in a different
it's a
different
new era
altitude
of Rockets basketball. Not sure if you've noticed, but yeah.
You're basically up there in Breckenridge, Colorado.
It was funny. What resonated with me with that cut were two things. Barkley is hilarious, obviously. And then Ernie in the middle of it going like 64-50. Like Ernie trying to reel it back in.
Yeah, yeah.
It's funny. It's just fun. Like Ernie just like try. Okay, we got to come back. Charles. And Charles just going. Charles doesn't give a rip about Ernie's rundown that he's got in front of him, or the producer in his ear saying, all right, we got 30 seconds to commercial. Charles like, lipstick on a pig, man. That ain't Lakers. They suck. They suck. You come at the king, you best not miss. Like, that was really good.
And, the thing that annoyed me about Reddick was that he took the job to be on First Take. What was he on? Whatever it was. And then, like, immediately acted like he was shocked by the low caliber of conversation on it. Like, dude, you took this job.
He was annoying.
There's like a prostitute all of a sudden acting like she didn't know she was going to have sex with men, her third year in the job.
Yeah.
You're like, all right, listen, it is what it is. You took the job. Don't act like all of a sudden you're better than this. Okay.
You knew there'd be ugly men involved in this, all right? You knew it.
That's how I'm justifying a poor tip, young lady.
Payne and Pendergast with you. Final segment coming up. Prediction time for Seth Payne.
Ah!
Also, I've got
this
some...
This is harder than a circle of trust in a good Astros season.
I enjoy AI now and kind of how it's embedded in some of our social media platforms. This one is a little... This Texans-related AI question that I hit here. I'm going to run it by Seth and see how he thinks AI did in answering the important question, why the Texans might consider bringing back Bill O'Brien.
Oh, that's right. Seth takes on big data coming up next.
We'll do that coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast is driven by West Point Lincoln of Sugarland. On the Southwest Freeway, exit Kirkwood and take the first U-turn at West Airport under the giant American flag. Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Hi, Payne and Pendergast with you. We'll get Seth's prediction here in just a second. Seth, I was fiddling around during the break on my phone a couple hours ago, and there was one of these posts from some nondescript outlet that had a graphic of either D'Amico or Bill O'Brien or something, and they're like, rumors are that the Texans may be looking to bring back Bill O'Brien as their head coach. And I'm like,
are those the rumors?
Yeah. I'm like, okay.
Oh, wait, okay. So,
pretty
wait,
sure
you
that's
saw it
true.
Did you say you saw it on Facebook?
Facebook, yeah. I saw it on Facebook. Yeah.
So it was one of these obviously fake stories. And then, like, how many people, based on the replies, could you tell thought that it was a serious story?
I didn't look at the replies. What I was more intrigued with, I mean, a lot of Texan fans were like, okay, I saw the few that they show, I didn't hit like show all comments and then read through them. Like the three or four that were right underneath it are reacting the same way you and I are reacting right now. Like,
yeah,
it's bogus. Stop doing that on the internet.
Yeah.
They'll never stop doing that. But what intrigued me was...
people keep believing it.
Yeah. What intrigued me was that Facebook has a feature now, like a lot of the social media outlets do, where they incorporate AI into it. And they've got questions underneath it, like underneath the post, like buttons with questions written on them that you can click and AI will answer the question for you.
Yeah.
So, of course, one of the questions was, why would the Houston Texans consider hiring Bill O'Brien again?
Yeah, okay, so, that's a good question.
Good question.
If that were indeed a true story, that would be a good question.
You tell me if these five bullet points they gave me, if I were to go into an argument with somebody, a debate, as to why they should do this, if these hold up for you. Number one, familiarity. Bill O'Brien has previous experience as the Texans head coach.
That's a good point.
2014 to 2020. So
I hadn't thought of that one.
So he's familiar with the team's culture and dynamics.
Okay, good. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, AI is... I love these AI things because so many of them are like, okay, we're in no danger of anytime soon of being replaced just yet.
Okay, so
just
yet. You're not buying familiarity. Number two, past success during his tenure O'Brien led the Texans to four AFC South Division titles in two playoff appearances. Actually, that's false. It's four playoff. You go to the two playoff wins, not right. Two playoff appearances.
Yeah, they get again, especially with sports, AI gets a lot of this stuff wrong. No, I think a lot of Texans fans, myself included, I would say most of us feel like Bill O'Brien was a potentially good head coach, but he was a horrible GM. You know, like there was something there. Like maybe he could turn the corner as a head coach. It was when he was made GM that everything all fell to pot.
Okay, I've got three more reasons.
Okay,
that AI has three more reasons. I'm just reading them. Number three, these are reasons that the Texans would consider bringing back Bill O'Brien. Coaching experience. O'Brien has a strong coaching background, including experience as an offensive coordinator and head coach in the NFL and college.
Yeah. Okay, thanks, AI.
Yeah, thanks. I was unaware.
All right, yeah.
Okay, reason number four.
That's a good argument compared to, say, other people that they might entertain.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, Urban Meyer. Would Bill O'Brien be a better choice than Urban Meyer?
100%.
To hire to the Houston Texans?
100%. Yes. Yeah. Neither would be great.
Well,
yeah.
Of course, Urban Meyer does have NFL head coaching experience now. But, like, let's say Urban Meyer a couple years ago.
Right. Yeah. Number four, leadership. O'Brien is known for his strong leadership and ability to motivate players.
Yes.
I think he's known for his ability to motivate certain players, and then I think he's known for his ability to alienate other players who want to
ring
his neck.
He's got a demotivational effect, right? Yes. He motivates them to force a trade.
Yes. This is the last one. Number five, redemption.
Ooh.
Bringing back Bill O'Brien could be seen as an opportunity for redemption, both for him and the team, after his previous departure.
Let's make this right.
Boy.
Let's right the previous wrongs and bring back Bill O'Brien.
Everywhere I go, people are clamoring for the Bill O'Brien redemption story. Everywhere.
To the point, cheerleaders could sing a song. Everywhere we go, people want to know who Bill O'Brien is. And does he have any previous NFL coaching experience?
Yeah.
Okay, let me ask you this, though. It's an interesting thought experiment. The Browns, for instance. Would the Browns have been better off just rehiring Bill Belichick after the first go around? Who knows?
Maybe they would have been. Maybe.
Yeah. Who are some other famous guys that flamed out? Coughlin's a tough one because Coughlin's immediate next stop was to the Giants, where he became a different type of head coach.
A couple Super Bowls. Yeah. Like flame outs. I'm trying to think. Oh, Pete Carroll's a good one. Like Pete Carroll, Pete Carroll flamed out in a couple of places. Came back.
Well, like Billy Martin. Like, how many times did Billy Martin get fired and rehired?
Rehired by the Yankees. Well, he got hired by the A's. He got hired by the Yankees like four or five times. Like, it was a lot.
Yeah.
It was a lot.
But it was all, was it, did he get, I cannot remember for the life of me. Did he get fired and then immediately rehired usually? Or he just fired, gone for a year, and then came back?
The ones I remember gone for a year, they fire him. Hired Gene Michael, bring him back. He went to the A's for a little while. I don't have the whole chronology, but he was, it became a joke. It became a meme, for commercials,
right,
with him and Steinbrenner. You know, Steinbrenner firing him on a Miller Lite commercial, that kind of thing,
Yeah.
So, all right. So it sounds to me, Seth, those five reasons don't really hold a ton of water for the O'Brien thing.
No, I don't think we're in any danger of Bill O'Brien coming back anytime
soon. Take
that,
AI. Yeah.
Do you think what's the over-under on number of years he'll remain at Boston College?
I think a while. I think that could be where he's from there. He's got the program in a decent place. They were way better this year than I thought they would be. They were in a bowl game this year.
Yeah.
So I think he could be there a while. I don't think the bar is all that high for what constitutes success there compared to Alabama, compared to all the schools that we watch play over the last two, 3 days.
Yeah.
He wins eight games a year there. He's a hero. He'll be good.
Billy Martin from 75 to 78. Billy Martin, 1979. Billy Martin, 1983.
Yep.
Billy Martin, 1985.
Yeah, man.
He came back for 1 year stints all those times.
Yeah.
Billy Martin, 1988, he was fired in season.
Yeah.
My God, that is nuts.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was that late night dial, man. He was, Steinbrenner get home, man, feeling some Billy Martin right now. I wonder what he's up to.
I wonder if he go into it. Now I'm going to be in a rabbit hole this afternoon. I wonder if he went into each of those kind of figuring he was a bridge coach of some sort.
Maybe.
He just knew what it was. It is what it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of like a... The you know, some of the guy that's been married five times, when he knows that in between wives, he's got his old standby, Gwyneth. Yeah.
Yeah, Gwyneth. Yeah. Everybody loves a good Gwyneth. Prediction time. Where do you think this game goes
really?
On Sunday? Yeah. It's a tradition.
This is a really tough one because we know that the Texans are treating this, or at least it very much looks like the Texans are treating this like a preseason game. So they keep saying D'Amico's got a plan for the players and how much they'll play, and depends on how the game is going. It feels the way that D'Amico has said a couple times that we'll see how the game goes, it feels like if they have early success, he's going to start resting people pretty immediately. Yep. So if they have a good first couple of series on offense and defense, which is possible, I'm trying not to be as pessimistic as I've been mostly about, because ultimately I don't care about the end result of this game. Since the Texans played the Titans have allowed 42 points to the Commanders.
Yep.
They played a Donnybrook against the Jaguars. It was a 10-6 game. The Jaguars scored 10 points. Then the Bengals scored 37 points on them.
Yep.
The Colts scored 38 points on them.
Okay.
And then the Jaguars scored 20 points last week.
Okay. The Colts one is the one where I'm like, all right, like Cincinnati and Washington are two legitimately good offensive teams, whereas the Texans are not. Like, all right, Indianapolis, they kind of stink offensively. They're not good. And I don't know if that was a Flacco joint or an Anthony Richardson joint that game. They yo-yo those quarterbacks
so much.
The 38.1. But you need to see something good offensively in this game. Look, the result of this game, we'll get your prediction, I promise, Seth. But you bring up the result of this game, and I get it, like, it doesn't mean anything to what the future holds for the Texans over the next several weeks. Nothing. Yeah. The results, just the score. Now, maybe something that happens in this game impacts next week, whether it's injury or confidence or whatever. But the score itself, but when I tell myself that if they lose this game, they finish 9-8, get swept by the Titans this season, and you know my beloved 10-game road winning streak in the AFC South comes to an end, versus double-digit wins, not getting swept by the Titans, making Amy Adams Strunk miserable for at least a day, and the winning streak goes to 11 games. I don't know, man. I'm kind of invested in this thing now.
That was the Colts game where the Colts scored 38 points. That was the game in which Anthony Richardson was 7-for-11 for 131 yards.
Oh.
And was that the Jonathan Taylor dropped ball at the goal line?
No, that was against the Broncos.
That was against the Broncos.
They lost that game.
In the game versus the Titans, Jonathan Taylor rushed for 218 yards and 3 touchdowns.
That was that game. Yeah.
So I'm going to say with the Texans probably resting C.J. Stroud and a couple other offensive starters after the first or second quarter, I'm going to this is going to be a game in which I think a lot of people, I think the television ratings in the second half are going to be a lot lower than the first half. And the Titans win 17-13. And I do think that this time of year, it seems like the Titans players genuinely like playing for Amy Adams Strunk and doing that for. Yeah. If you can salvage something to play for emotionally, however many of those guys buy into that, versus a Texans team that's basically being told, as far as I can tell, the Texans players are being told, hey, this is a preseason game. The emotional engagement in there is just, it's just not going to be there. I can't remember the last time I was a good veteran player that went in supercharged up to try to win a preseason game.
Yeah.
So, 17-13 Titans.
17-13 Titans. I said 23-16 Texans. I'm just spitballing. I have no idea. We have no idea how the Titans are going to handle this game. They've said they're going to play both quarterbacks. We don't know what that means. You know, we have no idea. So, all right. So, there you go. In the loop today, totally new crew today. We got Luke Morrow. We got Chris Partee. We got Colin Neal pushing the buttons in there. Fellas, how we feeling? How we doing?
Doing well. Yeah. I'm just trying to make sure I don't mess up over here and feel the wrath of Seth's blackjack after all that conversation yesterday.
Oh, did you order it, Seth? Did you order the blackjack?
I didn't order the blackjack. I feel like it's kind of just... Because the same reason I keep my gun in a safe, I don't want to have easy access to something that I might use irrationally or in a fit of passion. I don't want to beat up the UPS driver with my blackjack. Okay. So no, yeah, you're fine, man. You're fine. You're good.
Chris, are you equally fearful of Seth and his blackjack? Okay, wait, I think...
You better turn on your damn microphone. Yeah, right, you get that microphone going or you're going
to... No, it's not. It's his microphone. Hey, no, fellas, turn his microphone up in here. This is a big problem. Hey.
He's so frightened. Yeah, He's so frightened. He can't even get the words out.
His microphone's not working. Yeah, it's,
just shout.
What y'all talking about in there?
Yeah. Can you get the mic?